So nice to sit with everyone. Thank you. And periodically, I would open my eyes just to check, see how folks are doing. It was really sweet to see people's pets, the cats and the dogs, moving through the screen. It's really sweet. So again, welcome anyone who joined post introductions. My name is Grace Fisher, and just really delighted, as always, to have the opportunity to sit together. And since January, we've been meandering, might be a word, through the teachings of the Four Noble Truths and in the Eightfold Path. And last week and the week before, exploring together the notions of wise speech and wise listening. And the second part of, let me see, the Eightfold Path is sort of lumped into three baskets. Let's go with that one. The first two, wise intention, wise understanding, is kind of the wisdom aspects of orientation. Like, oh, right. How do we think about this movement on the path, and what intentions do we have about embarking upon this path? The next basket is really one of sila, the Pali word for ethics, morality, intention, skillful behavior. And the first part of this basket, to mix the metaphor, is wise speech and its close cousin, deep listening. And the second aspect in this basket is that of wise action and how we move in the world. And I want to talk about this from this. Our actions kind of are everything in a way. The teachings of the five recollections, which I'll share. There's a lot of different wordings of this. I don't love the wordings of these I'm going to share. There are others. I just couldn't find the ones I really like, so bear with me. But the five remembrances or five recollections, there's no way to escape aging. I too will grow old. There's no way to escape physical degeneration. My body too will weaken. There's no way to escape death. I too will die. Everything and everyone changes. We must part, even from ones we love. My deeds are always with me as propensities. Only my karma accompanies me when I die. My karma is the ground upon which I stand. Another translation, those of anyone who's in Vinny's class, A Year to Live, the line of, my actions are my only true belongings in this world. That's what will set the seeds of karma in this lifetime, and karma, amusing in a more general way of just consequences. Our actions have consequences. We say something, we do something that has a harsh consequence. It causes harm in some way that we might feel bad. Oh, I hurt someone's feelings. I acted unskillfully. Or there's just someone's hurt out there in the world, and sort of the consequences of then what that hurt person goes and does. And we're seeing this obviously globally. What happens as a result of people not being heedful, mindful of their actions and the harms they cause. And this is part of the human condition right through time. But as individuals, as women, how do we pay attention to our actions, what we put out in the world? And again, that sense that the actions that we do take, we own that. And being able to hold this really as a liberating aspect rather than, oh no, because in being able to slow down, we become aware of how we want to act. And you might notice I'm kind of brain freezing because I have freaking out. We didn't already talk about this, did we? I was sharing with them, like, sometimes I am teaching different classes and sometimes they're not in sync. And I had this like, oh no. So thank you for the, for the reassurance there. Speaking of, I don't know if it's not being mindful or not, but just wanting to be clear about not repeating myself too much. So in this course of being able to examine our actions, it's really a beautiful thing. And when I spoke earlier about our practice is not just on the cushion, but it's out in the world. It's how we talk. It's how we listen. It's what we do. It's the thoughts that we create. It's how those thoughts, that phrase, that with our thoughts, we create our world. and how we move in the world does have impact. And again, being able to hold the gravitas of that, no small act. We don't know the ripple effects that it will have for good or for ill. And being able to slow down enough to be clear about the first aspects of the Eightfold Path of wise understanding and wise intention. What am I trying to do here? And the way wise action can be kind of teased apart in terms of what does that even mean, wise action? Gil Fronsdale has a very pithy article on wise action in parts that he folds in the importance of faith. And this is one of my favorite Pali words ever, the sadha. What do we rest our heart upon? Having faith in our capacity to meet whatever challenges are presented to us in a skillful and wise way, because we can lean back into the teachings. So infusing a sense of faith and confidence in our actions to be skillful, to make amends when we are not skillful, because there will be times that we are not going to be, okay? We just kind of build that in. In relationships, we will get hurt, we will hurt others. So how do we move and accept that? The forgiveness of ourselves. Ugh, I wish I wouldn't have said that. I wish I wouldn't have done that. And in a way that is timely and appropriate, not pushed, can we open up to the possibility of forgiving another for their unskillfulness, for the ways in which they're caught? That's another topic, unforgiveness, which I love to talk about, but we'll get there later. But this is part of under this large, wide umbrella of what comprises wise action. Another component in this is intention. Why are we doing what we're doing? Can we slow down enough to understand what's the motivation here? Not from a critical, judgmental. So I was raised Catholic, and it's not so much if you're going to go to hell if you do X or Y, which was definitely the air I kind of breathed as a kid, but more, what's it rooted in? We've spoken over these weeks of what are our values? How do we live from a place of support of the two wings of the Dharma, wisdom and compassion? And if we can kind of hold these, one image is the wings of the Dharma, and a quote, who I'm forgetting who's by, spoke about these are the two banks, wisdom and compassion in our lives, kind of move between these two banks. When we're paying attention, how can we feel the support of these two banks, these two wings of wisdom and compassion? Can the actions that I undertake through movement, speech, ways of being in the world, can they be guided by wisdom and compassion? And again, sometimes not. And that's okay. That's part of this human experience. Another component to this wise action, as I mentioned right in the beginning in the arriving sit, is letting go. Slowing down enough to realize, is what I'm carrying serving me or not serving me? Whether it's a story I have about myself or another person, a belief I have about myself or another person. A wound that we have all been hurt. And those wounds, some wounds heal, some don't. Some leave big scars, some leave small scars, some fester. So are we moving in the world from a place of that wounded place? And how do we turn towards the part of ourselves that is our still wounded to tend to that place, what's needed to help heal the harm done? And then being able to perhaps put down some anger or resentment or the story that like, that place. And again, all of these things have their own seasons. The wisdom, there is wisdom in anger. This is not in any way about not being angry. It's just being aware. What are the energies I'm carrying? What's serving me? And absolutely, sometimes that anger serves us. It can be empowering, and there's wisdom in it. And being able to distill the reactive qualities of anger, from which when we move from that place, we can do harm. But being able to say, what's at the seed of that anger? And the quote from the Valerie Kaur's book, Seeing No Stranger, which I love, is the, if I can get it right, grief, joy is the gift of love. Grief is the price of love, the sorrow, because we do love. And anger shows us what we truly love. that's not a quite exact quote, but that's the nature of it, and being able to hold the anger as a wisdom component in our actions rather than that the reactivity that guides us. And the third part in the wise action is mindfulness. No surprise, right? Can we pay attention enough at times to know what it is, what actions we're putting out into the world? And again, being able to ground this in how do we want to live? What qualities that all of us in our commitments to show up here on a Thursday, there's a commitment to practice. There's a commitment to cultivating qualities of the heart, a steadiness of the mind. Those might not be the words that you would share to describe why it is you show up, but you're showing up. But there's a commitment here. And how do we undertake the training to put that commitment into practice? And I want to share the precepts. So those of you who have sat on retreat, you know when we come on retreat, in person or otherwise, we share together the precepts, which is the Buddha's way of saying, here are some nice guidelines to help you to sort of be signposts, as it were, on this path to say, these are good actions. Like, do this, don't do this. And again, not in that judgment, if you do this, you're going to go to hell version, but just these are ways of living skillfully such that we don't create harm in the world. Because when we have caused harm, we can often, when we come to take our seat in the cushion, we don't feel very good. There can be guilt and remorse and or shame or some of that swirling about of just not feeling good because our energies that we've put out in the world have caused harm. The Buddha's invitation, live the life of the blameless. And he says, okay, here's how. You know, to walk on this Eightfold Path, and in part of this wise action, we can undertake the trainings of these precepts. And I love the phrasings, wrong page, by a woman by name Stephanie Kaza, K-A-Z-A. Yeah. She writes, knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to protect life. So sometimes the precepts can be spoken in the negative. Do no harm. Do not, you know. And this is a really beautiful offering of how, because we know we are connected, can I undertake the training to my actions be that of protecting life? Undertake the training to protect life. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to only take what is freely given to me. So, and it's flip in the negative is we don't steal, don't take what is not offered, but only take what is freely given to me. And this can be in terms of material belongings. It can be energetically from the people that we love. What is freely offered versus what are we trying to take from someone? Knowing how deeply our lives are intertwined, I undertake the training to protect relationships and avoid sexual misconduct. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to speak kindly and truthfully. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to protect the clarity of my mind through avoiding intoxicants. So these invitation of moving from a place of a clear mind, of wanting to protect relationships, protect life, to speak kindly and truthfully. You know, to consider for a moment where we might be as global citizens if this were a predominant way in which we lived, right? It'd be pretty sweet. And that undertaking of the training, I've said this before and I say it to myself all the time, that we are always practicing something. What do we want to be practicing? What do we want to be cultivating? We have that through these teachings, this practice, we have that ability to make that choice if we can slow down enough to say, wait, what am I doing? Can I pause, check in, is what I'm about to do or say in alignment with how I want to show up? And of course, again, we're not always going to be able to do that, but it's a really lovely tool to be able to cultivate and practice our ability to slow down enough to pay attention to the actions that we undertake. Okay. I have those of you who know me, in Buddhist psychology, there's three types. There's a greed type, there's an aversive type, and there's a deluded type. The aversive type walks into the room and is like, that's not right, and there's that needs to be caulked, and this is dirty, and the greed type is like, ooh, that's so nice. So those of you who know me, I'm a greed type. So I have all these quotes. It's like, ooh, what to share? So a little bit of inside behind the scenes of my workings of my mind. So from Ram Dass, on the path of action, we need to act from our deepest intuitive appreciation of what is appropriate in the moment. We must ask ourselves whether each act is in harmony with our values, whether each act uses our particular skills, talents, and personality characteristics. Does each act make use of the opportunities we have? Does it acknowledge our liabilities as well as our assets? Is it take into account our existing responsibilities? Is this action honoring the diverse roles we are called to fulfill in this moment? The path of action calls upon us to act with discriminating wisdom and skillful means. Whatever the task, washing dishes, whatever, we bring to the situation our full attention, our appreciation of the situation, and our skills in the performance of this action. Right. We undertake the training to slow down, to have enough presence of mind, to be aware and to make choices. How are my actions in alignment with my values? How do they honor the responsibilities, the gifts, the privileges that some of us have, the challenges some of us have? How do we work with the conditions into which we were born, the conditions of the mind in which the environments in which we were raised, grew up in, continue to live in? How do we parse through that which covers, hinders, blocks the flow of our heart and the stillness of our mind such that we can act from a place of wisdom and clarity and kindness? So there's a poem I'm going to share. I have shared it before. I try not to share things too often. I know how that goes. But I do love this poem, and I feel it speaks, it's appropriate for this talk. And I don't have a printout, hence another device. And as this speaks to the choices that we make and how we align our actions with what we truly value. And it's a poem by Davrick Leggett called The Good Ancestor. Every day I walk 100 years to the hill where my great-great-great-granddaughter sits. I carry words of blessing and reach to touch her back. But feeling me near, she turns sad-eyed and heavy with grief. What was it like, she asks, when the great whales swam, when the birds sang you awake, when the rains came soft and the soil smelt sweet underfoot and the blessings catch in my throat. On darker days, she turns her famished face charred and eyes sunk in their bony orbits burn with curses and the blessings froth at my mouth with the poisonous spume of betrayal. On the darkest of all days, I walk the 100 years and find no one there. Let today be the bright day. Let today be the bright day. I lay my hand upon her back, and feeling me near, she turns and blesses me, saying, your love was fierce enough, sweet ancestor. Your love was fierce enough. So I ask you to close your eyes. And if we collectively walk the 100 years to the great, great, great grandchildren that may be of our own blood or not, and to imagine that ancestor, again, that may be blood related or may simply be related to us by the fellowship of our humanity. And to have that child turn to us and say, your love was fierce enough, sweet ancestor. Your love was fierce enough. What might those words mean to you today in terms of the actions that you take in this moment, on this day, this week, this year, this lifetime? How might you shape your actions today, this week, this month, this lifetime, such that 100 years hence, the ancestors turn to you, to us collectively, and say, your love was fierce enough, sweet ancestor. Our actions have consequences. Our inactions have consequences. Our speech have consequences. Our silence has consequences. Given the opportunities we have to choose one action over another, one source of speech over another, what actions do we choose? To influence the future such that that sweet ancestor, sweet descendant, sorry, 100 or so years turns and says, your love was fierce enough. And just to let the possibilities kind of cascade through, whether it's actions on the large scale or small, both are important. To not feel overwhelmed by this. But perhaps to hold this as a gift of awareness. That we can feel into a sense of gravitas, of responsibility that we have as women of the world in 2021 to shape our actions. To demonstrate today that our love is fierce enough. To be capable of bringing goodness and blessings and kindness and wisdom and compassion and laughter and love and joy into this world. Your love is fierce enough to do that in this moment, on this day. With whatever, despite whatever, perhaps because of whatever sorrows we may be sitting with, whatever heartaches we may be sitting with, whatever challenges we may be sitting with, can we allow that to tenderize and open our heart such that our love is truly fierce enough. So, thank you for coming along on that journey with me. And would love to open it up to hear what came up for you or your thoughts about wise action or just any questions you may have. And the questions can also be practice related if that's helpful. So just look forward to sharing it. And I'm aware it can kind of be like a shift in energies to now step forth into the Zoom room. And just please feel welcome to raise your blue hand and also. If you would feel more comfortable chatting your question in, that's fine too. So thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.